Now a descending view of bustling Baker Street. Horse-drawn carriages trot along past merchants, workers, and crowded storefronts. Opening titles appear. Granada Television presents Jeremy Brett and Edward Hardwick in The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Hawkers sell newspapers to passers-by dressed in top hats and long coats. A bobby waves away street urchins from the front of a shop. From his second-story window, the dashing, sharp-nosed Sherlock Holmes turns toward us with a bemused smile, his sleek profile framed by a view of the wagon-filled street. The scene freezes and dissolves to a tin-type photograph. Daytime in a stable. Below a mounted moose head, we see the stall of a pure white horse. Its large brown eye blinks at us in profile. A man with salt and pepper hair stands beside it, caressing its cheek. The man runs his hand along the horse's back as two men enter the stable.
And this is where the prince is stabled.
He steps out of the stall.
Oh, Sir Robert.
Sorry to disturb you.
This is Joe Barnes.
Josiah's boy.
I know who he is, Mason. What's he doing here?
He's keen to race horses.
Can't ride, Sir Robert. I'd like to be a jockey.
Would you?
More than anything in the world.
Well, that's good. Very good. But what has it got to do with me?
I thought I could work for you.
I have all the jockeys I need.
The lanky boy steps forward.
Please give me a chance, sir. I'll muck out the stables, clean the yard, anything you want.
I'll think about it.
Thank you, Sir Robert.
Sir, at the house. You better come quick.
Why?
There's trouble, sir.
Now we see a butler standing before an open door. Two stern-looking men brush past him.
I told you, Lady Beatrice is unwell and does not wish to be disturbed.
I think she'll make an exception in my case.
I'm sorry, sir. I have strict instructions.
Are you going to let me speak to Lady Beatrice? Or will I have to use force?
He pokes the butler's chest with his top hat.
Your answer to me first, Brewer.
This gentleman is most insistent upon speaking to her ladyship, sir.
Wielding a cane, Sir Robert walks menacingly up to Brewer.
I warned you never to come here. Our business can be discussed at your office, not here.
I've tried to settle this matter on many occasions, as you well know, Sir Robert.
You've got a nerve coming here after Newmarket.
I'm leaving nothing to chance this time.
Brewer's companion looks on.
Perhaps Lady Beatrice will be more prepared to listen to reason.
Your grievance is with me, Brewer, and with no one else.
It would certainly be of concern to Lady Beatrice.
A sickly woman enters the room with the assistance of a maid.
Robert, who are these people? What do they want?
I'll tell you what I want, Lady Beatrice.
Get him out of here!
I want what's rightfully mine!
Sir Robert lunges at Brewer.
Get out! Go! While you can still walk.
I'll be back, Lady Beatrice. Good day to you.
Brewer motions to his bald, burly bodyguard. Sir Robert watches them leave. He runs a hand nervously through his hair, then takes Lady Beatrice's hand. She wears a formal gray nightgown and robe.
I'm sorry you've been upset, my dear.
What did he mean, Robert? What's rightfully his?
Nothing for you to worry about.
But I do worry, Robert. I know you too well.
He raises her hand to his lips, gives it a long, intense kiss, then kisses her pale, ashen cheek lightly. Lady Beatrice turns from his embrace to leave.
He won't bother us again.
Outside, two derby-hatted men in work clothes swing open a black steel gate. A coachman drives the open carriage containing Brewer and his henchmen through the gate.
What should we do if he does come back, sir?
If he does come back, I'll deal with him myself.
Sir Robert gives Mason a quick, over-the-shoulder glance, then leaves. Now we see Joe Barnes hanging on the outside of the black steel gate. He climbs down and watches Sir Robert mount a chestnut mare. Sir Robert rides off through the gate, oblivious to Joe, who stares longingly after him. Now a distant view of men on horseback. On a hilltop above them, an elegant country manor. Opening titles, Robin Ellis and Frank Grimes in Shoscombe Old Place, dramatized by Gary Hopkins. Now at the Baker Street flat, Watson sits at the table reading a paper and drinking tea. Mrs. Hudson places a teapot on the table and picks up a saucer holding two covered egg cups. She shoots Watson a sour look. He shrugs and motions toward Holmes, who crouches on his bedroom floor and tosses newspapers about like a whirlwind.
What's the name of your racing.
I ought to. I pay for it with about half my wound pension.
Can I make you my handy guide to the turf?
Oh, what?
Does the name Sir Robert Norbiton recall anything?
Holmes burns his fingers on the teapot.
He's got a horse running in the Champion Stakes. He lives at Shoscombe Hall. His stables are known locally as Shoscombe Old Place.
But you don't know the man himself?
I never met him, if that's what you mean. He has a reputation for being rather a dangerous man.
How dangerous?
I remember an incident some months ago when he horsewhipped a man on Newmarket Heath.
Samuel Brewer, the Curzon Street moneylender. What was the reason for this assault?
Well, I imagine that Sir Robert had a grudge against moneylenders.
Or is heavily in their debt.
Well, by all accounts, he's so far down Queer Street, he may never find his way back again.
I received a letter from John Mason, the head trainer at Shoscombe. It arrived an hour ago.
He hands Watson the letter.
Dear Mr. Holmes, you will no doubt have read of the disappearance a number of days ago of Samuel Brewer. In the interests of my employer, Sir Robert Norbiton, I should like to visit you to discuss a matter of the utmost urgency.
He suggests a convenient time. It's already several minutes late.
Samuel Brewer's disappeared.
The newspapers make little of it, but let's hear more about Shoscombe.
Well, the Shoscombe Spaniels, special pride of the lady of Shoscombe Place.
The wife of Sir Robert Norbiton, I presume?
No, he never married. He lives with his widowed sister, Lady Beatrice Folder.
You mean she lives with him?
No, the place belonged to her late husband, Sir James. What should be amiss at Shoscombe?
What indeed? And yet I expect it's the man who can tell us. Yes?
Mrs. Hudson enters.
My eggs were hard-boiled.
There's Mr. Mason to see you, sir.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Show him in.
Mason walks into the room hesitantly.
You got my note, Mr. Holmes.
Yeah. But it explained nothing.
It was too delicate a thing for me to put the details on paper. It's too complicated.
You may rely on the discretion of my friend and colleague, Dr. Watson. Please sit down.
Thank you.
Mason rounds the couch and sits down. He wears a tweed suit and has wavy gray hair and clear brown eyes.
Mr. Holmes, I think Sir Robert Norbiton is gone mad.
Lobster, please. This is Baker Street, not Harley Street. Why do you say so?
I believe Shoscombe Prince and the Champion Stakes have turned his
brain. Shoscombe
Prince? Holmes turns to Watson, who mouths the words, a horse.
Watson, you're invaluable. A horse?
The finest in England, sir. Now, the truth is, Sir Robert has got to win this race. He's up to his neck, and it's his last chance. He's wagered everything he could raise or borrow on the horse, and he's holding off his creditors till after the big race. Oh, if the prince fails him, he's done for.
And you're assuming there's a connection between Sir Robert's debts and the disappearance of Samuel Brewer?
He's Sir Robert's principal creditor. And I don't mind admitting there's no love lost between them.
Well, after what happened in Newmarket, I'm not surprised.
Well, that was just the start. Brewer showed his face at the hall last week, and Sir Robert flew at him like a man possessed. Said he'd deal with him if he ever showed his face there again.
Well, presumably he's not returned.
I don't know, sir. Not for sure.
I see.
In the event of financial catastrophe, would Sir Robert have any claim on his sister's estate?
None at all, as far as I know. She only has a life interest, and it reverts to her husband's brother after her death. In the meantime, her ladyship draws the rents every year.
And her brother spends them.
Mason nods.
That's about the size of it.
He must lead her a most uneasy life.
Well, maybe so, but they've always been the best of friends. They have the same tastes. And she loves the horses as much as he does. Or at least she did.
Intrigued, Holmes cocks his head. A flashback.
Every day at about 12, she'd ride down to the stables to see them. And above all, she loved the prince.
Lady Beatrice and her maid stand in the stable yard with Mason and the white horse.
Good morning, Beatrice.
She gives her brother a wide smile.
I can't wait to see their faces when this delightful creature is first past the post. What say you, Mason?
The others won't stand a chance, sir.
A three-length win, wouldn't you say?
Three and a half, at least.
Just beware of raising your hopes too high, Robert. You're not the only one who'd like to see his horse win the Champion Stakes.
I'm the only one with a horse like Shoscombe Prince.
He's on such good form, you could ride him to victory yourself, my dear.
I think not, Robert. Our riding days are over.
She looks wistfully into his eyes. He pats her hand and escorts her to an awaiting open carriage. Lady Beatrice boards the carriage, then sways unsteadily, closing her eyes. She recovers and places a gloved hand over her mouth.
You should be resting, my dear.
No, I'm fine, Robert. Really, I'm fine.
You know what the doctor said?
You fuss even more than he does.
A black and white cocker spaniel scurries into the coach.
Jasper, good dog. And how's Carrie today?
The maid's face brightens.
Very well, thank you, Sir Robert.
Her face stiffens as Lady Beatrice shoots her a hard look.
For the past week, her ladyship has driven past the stables with never so much as a good morning.
You think there's been some sort of quarrel?
And a bitter, savage, spiteful quarrel at that. Now he never goes near her. She hardly leaves her room, except to take her daily drive.
And I assume that you have witnessed such a disagreement?
No, not exactly. But why else would he give away her pet spaniel, Mr. Holmes? She loved that dog as if it were her child.
Holmes purses his lips.
Can you think of any reason why Sir Robert would wish to upset his sister in this fashion?
None at all. It's a cruel way to treat a woman with a weak heart. It's a damn rotten.
I must say, he does not appear to be committing any crime that I recognize.
Holmes and Watson exchange glances. Mason leans forward.
So why did Sir Robert leave the house at the dead of night? And who was the man he met?
Gone.
Another flashback. Two figures in a graveyard.
Well, it was Stevens, the butler, who saw him leave, and he told me about it. So the next night, we followed him.
Stevens and Mason wind their way through an unkempt cemetery with tall weeds and slanted tombstones to an ominous, abandoned Gothic church. The two men peek through a window, their eyes wide and mouths agape. They peer down at Sir Robert, pacing and wringing his hands by the light of a lantern. He speaks to a capped man who sits at his feet. Back at Baker Street, Holmes's sharp-nosed profile leans toward Mason.
So who was it? Samuel Brewer?
It was too dark to see his face.
When did Sir Robert give away his sister's dog?
A week ago today. Jasper was howling like a banshee at the mill house. But that was no good reason for the master to do what he did.
Another flashback. Daytime. Jasper wags his tail by the back of the mill house door. Sir Robert grabs the dog violently by the collar.
Sir Robert, I wanted off this estate. I don't care what you do with it, just as long as I never have to see it again.
Sir Robert lets go of the dog and marches off.
Yes,
now in the stable yard.
I gave the dog to Sandy Bain, the prince's jockey.
Right then, Jasper. Let's you and I go for a drink, eh? Come.
Next morning, he took it to Josiah Barnes, the landlord at the Green Dragon in Crandall.
Does Lady Beatrice have a companion?
Her maid, Mr. Holmes.
Just the one?
Carrie Evans. She's been with her this 5 years.
And isn't it out devoted?
She's devoted enough. I won't say to whom.
Uh-huh.
Holmes's brow twitches.
I can't tell tales out of school.
Sir Robert is something of a ladies' man, eh?
Mason nods.
Do you not think the quarrel between brother and sister may lie there?
Oh, that scandal has been pretty clear for a long time.
But Lady Beatrice may not have seen it before. Let us suppose that she has suddenly found it out. That she wants to be rid of the hated maid. He will not permit it. She refuses to speak to him.
And Sir Robert, in his anger, gives away her dog.
There's more to it than that, Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Mason, you have the advantage of us. Perhaps there is something that you have not told us.
Holmes arches his brow. Mason looks down sheepishly and reaches into his pocket.
There's a central heating furnace in the cellar.
He removes a sooty, bulky rag. Holmes lets out a deep breath, licks his lips, then extends his hand. A flashback. A young man peers into a glowing furnace.
It's been off for some time, but Sir Robert complained of cold and had it on again.
Harvey runs it. He's one of my lads.
Harvey's eyes widen.
He didn't like the look of it, Mr. Holmes.
The flashback dissolves to Holmes at his lab table.
And he brought it to me last night.
How often does Harvey attend the furnace?
He makes it up every evening and then he leaves it.
So anyone could visit it during the night?
I suppose so. But the lad has the key to the outer door.
I see. What is the name of that tavern you spoke of?
Green Dragon.
Is there any good fishing in that part of Berkshire?
There's trout in the mill stream and pike in the lake.
That's good enough. What do you make of it, Watson?
It's the upper condyle of a femur.
Watson hands the bulky rag back to Holmes, who uncovers a charred gray piece of bone. Watson and Mason watch intently as Holmes inspects the fragment.
Human?
Without a doubt.
Holmes rises from his seat and holds the bone up to the light. End of part one. Now in a parlor, Mason stands reading a telegram. Sir Robert paces in the background.
It's a bluff, sir. Anyone could have sent it. Could be a tout.
I don't care who it is. I need to know if there's any truth in what he's written. Carrie will be in charge of the house while I'm away.
Mason shoots him a curious look.
Carrie, sir?
Your concern must be for the prince's training. Nothing is more important than that.
Now in Lady Beatrice's bedroom.
3, 54, 55.
Yes, ma'am?
Thank you, Stevens. Please take the tray now.
We see Lady Beatrice's back as Carrie brushes her hair.
56.
Carrie freezes as Sir Robert enters the room. He stands waiting for Stevens to exit.
I leave at dawn.
Carrie nods dutifully. Lady Beatrice bows her head without turning around. The scene dissolves to a clear, flat meadow bordering a tranquil lake. 8 men on horseback begin to trot, then gallop across the clearing in a single line. The pure white prince starts last. The prince quickly catches up to the last 3 horses, then rounds the outside to challenge the 4 remaining steeds. Prince's snowy white mane flies wildly in the wind. His nostrils flare and his shoulders pulsate as he closes in on the lead horse, a shiny black charger. Sir Robert sits on his chestnut mare, absorbing the action. Now, outside the Green Dragon Inn, local men sit on wooden benches, drinking ale from pewter mugs. Holmes rounds the back of a carriage, one arm poised behind his back. He gives the local men a quick once-over, then enters the inn. Watson follows, but is distracted by the sight of a white goat on a hilltop. The local men whisper among themselves as he enters. Inside, a stocky, woolly-haired man leads Holmes and Watson through the crowded bar.
2 rooms, is it then, sir?
And 2 glasses of your best ale.
Right, sir.
The dog, Jasper, in a corner.
Good day, gentlemen. Hello, old fellow. Oh, ladies, I'm so sorry. I just used to be there.
He sits opposite a man holding Jasper's leash.
That's quite a bite in the air, isn't it?
Oh, you'd much rather be free, wouldn't you?
Landlord! Is it really necessary to keep this dog tied up like this?
If I didn't, sir, he'd be off back to the old in a jiffy. You see, sir, Jasper's a Truscombe spaniel.
Oh, I should have known. You see, I'm quite a dog enthusiast myself.
A boy stumbles in, laden with bags.
Oi! Be careful with that luggage or I'll skin you alive.
The landlord brings Holmes and Watson 2 pewter steins.
Don't you mind him, sirs. He takes after his mother. Out for a bit of fishing, eh?
We thought we might try and land a pike or 2 at the whole lake.
And you might find yourselves in the lake before you were through.
Why is that?
Sir Robert's terrible jealous of anyone who might be spying on his stables.
Well, we're not touts.
He's the sort that strikes first and speaks afterwards.
He nods congenially, then turns away.
Watson, I think we should take a little walk before lunch.
Watson raises his eyebrows.
Splendid idea.
Do you think we could take the dog with us, landlord?
By all means, gentlemen. But mind what I said about Sir Robert.
Later, Watson steps out the door, adjusting his coat. Holmes stops behind him.
It's this way, Watson.
Holmes turns left, with Jasper in tow. He heads toward the rear of the inn. Watson takes another look at the goat on the hilltop, then hustles after Holmes, his cane propped on his shoulder. Now the two men hike through a grassy lakeside forest.
What about Sir Robert? By my estimate, he should be well on his way to York by now.
How do you know that?
That is when my telegram was sent in.
Holmes, what have you been up to? Of course, Palmer's the favorite. He's stabled somewhere near York.
I merely advise him that the horse has shown much improvement in the last few days.
He won't be pleased when he finds he's been duped.
I'm sure he'll be furious.
A smiling man approaches.
Jasper! Jasper! Come on, boy. Hello, boy. How are you? Hey, hello. Jasper, here.
Mm. The man pats Jasper's side, then stands up. Jasper flaps his ears.
Do I know you?
No, but evidently Jasper knows you. You must be Sandy Bay.
Yes, sir.
It was you that brought Jasper to the tavern last week.
You're fond of animals.
But they're all God's creatures, sir. I won't see no harm come to them.
Mr. Mason seemed to think that Jasper had a lucky escape.
He must have had a reason for behaving like he did.
I'm sure Sir Robert had the best of motives.
No, I'm talking about Jasper. He's always such a quiet dog. Well, something must have happened to him.
At the mill house?
No, sir.
At the cellar?
No, sir. At the old church.
A flashback.
It was the same morning I brought him to the Green Dragon. It's an old ruined chapel. And under it, there's a crypt which has a bad name among us.
He stands in the cemetery, staring at the boarded-up chapel. Jasper breaks free of his leash.
Jasper! Not that way! Jasper! Jasper, come back!
We shift to the point of view of Jasper, shuffling past dead leaves and twigs on the ground. Then a series of fallen religious statues.
Jasper, come back! Jasper! Jasper!
Sandy looks up to find a stone gargoyle leering down at him. He pushes open a decayed wooden door. Inside the chapel courtyard, thin, pallid trees jut toward the sky. Ivy lines the moldy outer walls. Sandy scans the area, then ducks around the trees and enters the chapel.
Jasper! Come on, boy. Come on, I'm not playing games now.
Birds scatter from their roosts in the bell tower. Outside, Sandy wanders through an archway of bare tree branches. Jasper scratches at an iron gate at the rear of the chapel and digs the earth beneath it.
Jasper
tries to squeeze through and around the gate. Sandy rushes to him and quickly reattaches the leash to his collar. Kneeling on the ground, Sandy freezes, then looks up. Sandy's brown eyes stare in disbelief at the leering gargoyle, its mouth agape. We see his slight frame dash through the thicket, tugging the reluctant Jasper behind him. Back to the present. Holmes stands with furrowed brow and pursed lips, looking down at the quietly panting Jasper.
How far are we away from the hall?
About a quarter of a mile, sir.
I'm correct in thinking that Lady Beatrice takes a drive about midday.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. We've not a moment to lose. Come, Jasper. Come, Watson. Come, goodbye,
Sandy frowns, confused, and stares after the two men. Now we see Lady Beatrice's carriage roll down the other side of the lake. Silhouettes of Holmes, Watson, and Jasper weave between the trees of the misty forest. Local men raise their caps as the carriage rolls by. Carrie sits stiffly beside Lady Beatrice, who wears an opaque hat veil over her face. Holmes jogs through the clearing with an intent, focused look. Watson brings up the rear. From Jasper's point of view, we see the grass rush beneath us. Watson and Holmes approach a road. The carriage rolls toward them some 20 yards away.
Stop the carriage, Watson! Stop the carriage!
Holmes veers off and runs behind a tree. Watson dashes forward, waving his arms.
Excuse me!
Watson stands in the middle of the road. Behind the tree, Jasper struggles to break free.
Direct us to the Green Dragon Tavern.
Holmes releases Jasper, who darts for the carriage. Carrie whirls around.
Drive on! Drive on!
The carriage jolts to a start, barely missing Watson.
Stay! Stay there! Stay there!
Jasper stops, then scurries to Watson with his head bowed. They both watch as the carriage rolls away. Carrie turns back around in her seat. Lady Beatrice takes a quick look over her shoulder, her face obscured by the veil. Later, in the tavern.
Well, there's nothing we can do until Lady Beatrice takes a drive again tomorrow.
You still haven't explained why I risked my life this afternoon.
It's just a theory.
You must be very disappointed. I was almost killed instead.
On the contrary, I think my little experiment was quite successful.
I fail to see how.
Dog, Watson. The dog. Does that suggest nothing to you?
Carrie Evans is determined to keep the dog and her mistress apart, so.
There is an alternative.
Yes. That Sir Robert has done away with the moneylender, Samuel Brewer. Don't forget.
He looks around the room.
Don't forget the human bone that was found. It's perfectly clear to me. They've crossed swords before. It's possible that Sir Robert has gone too far this time and is guilty of murder. What the boy found is all that remains of the unfortunate moneylender.
Oh, landlord, thank you. I'm famished.
Morning, catch, Mr. Holmes.
He sets down a steaming black pot.
Best I've seen in a long time.
He removes the lid. Holmes and Watson peek at the murky brown stew.
These are deep waters, Watson. Deep and rather dirty.
Now in the stable yard, Holmes, Mason, and Watson.
I would like to borrow the key to the cellar.
For what purpose, Mr. Holmes?
To get inside. Where is Sir Robert?
Well, Sir Robert left for York.
Ah.
Early yesterday morning. He isn't expected back till sometime tonight. I'd show you around the house myself, but Master left Carrie in charge, and she won't let anyone pass the door.
He left a maid in charge of the house?
I told you things were bad between Master and her ladyship.
Whereabouts is Lady Beatrice's room?
It's on the ground floor, Mr. Holmes, on account of her ladyship's heart.
Precisely on the ground floor where?
Second room in the corridor beside the cellar passageway.
Has there been any change in the running of the house since we spoke at Baker Street?
None that I can think of. Yeah, apart from the fact that I had to dismiss Harvey, one of my stable lads.
Wasn't he the one that found the bone in the furnace?
That's right.
What was the reason for his dismissal?
Well, he'd stolen some money from some of the other staff. Ah, here's the prince himself, Mr. Holmes.
Sandy rides the prince up to them. Mason pats his nose affectionately.
Every inch a champion, would you say?
Yes, he's a very fine creature, but you're the expert, Watson.
Well, hardly an expert, Holmes. I am aware of the prince's burst of speed over a final furlong, but the fact is, he hasn't yet won a major race.
Do you think he's still in with a good chance?
Is this given the ground, then yes.
Mason smiles nervously. Now, outside Shoscombe Manor, we see Lady Beatrice wearing her veiled hat and a flowered shawl. She boards the carriage with the assistance of Carrie. Carrie climbs in after her, wearing a modest gray hat and black-trimmed cape. As they roll off through the gate, Watson emerges from his hiding place at the side of the house. The gatekeeper tips his hat at the ladies as the carriage passes. Inside, Stevens, the butler, hobbles to the door.
Afternoon. You must be Stevens.
That's right, sir.
I'm the doctor. Well, Sir Robert asked me to call on his sister at the first opportunity. I'm new to the area.
He said nothing about it to me, sir.
Oh, he must have forgotten. Hardly surprising for a man as busy as Sir Robert.
I'm afraid her ladyship is out taking her carriage exercise at the moment.
How long is she likely to be?
Well, no more than half an hour, sir.
Oh, in that case, I don't mind waiting.
Watson checks his pocket watch. Stevens shrugs and closes the door.
You appear to be in some pain yourself.
Oh, it's the rheumatiz, sir. These old bones have taken a pounding in their time. Health's not what it was.
Now, why don't you tell me about it?
Beg pardon, sir.
Well, now that I'm here, I might as well make myself useful.
Oh, that's very kind of you, sir. Thank you. Well, it starts in the bottom of my wrist.
The scene changes to a dark cellar. Holmes's silhouette emerges from the shadows. A door leading upstairs casts a shaft of light. Holmes peeks at it, then crosses the lit area and strides purposefully toward the furnace. He grabs the furnace handle with a gloved hand. He yanks away his hand, shakes off the pain, then kneels down and cautiously releases the latch on the bottom door of the furnace. The lower door opens with a single gliding motion. Holmes reaches inside. He pulls out a tray of ash and residue and sifts through it with the tip of his cane. A small rectangular metal casing peeks out from under the debris. Holmes takes it and shakes off the soot. He flips over the half-melted casing to find a coat of arms intact on its underside.
S.B.
He glances upward in thought. Later, he hurries down the cellar corridor, his long tweed coattails flapping at his heels, and rushes upstairs. Now, Watson, Stevens, and a maid in the kitchen.
Of course, the worst time is first thing in the morning. My back and my legs, oh, stiff as a board.
At a window, Holmes points his cane at Watson with a quick, grim
feet.
Smile.
Did I tell you about my feet?
No.
Oh, I'll tell you about my feet. Blocks of ice, like blocks of ice. Can't feel them sometimes.
Your blood's not circulating properly. It's a common problem.
And then there's the other trouble.
Stevens leans close to him.
The other trouble?
No, the other trouble.
Watson gives a flustered smile to the portly maid, then puts a hand to his temple. Now we see Holmes at the end of a long hallway. He inspects two parallel doors. He reaches for one, then steps inside. In a bedroom, Holmes walks over to a mahogany four-poster bed and pokes at the linens with his cane. He plunges his nose into a pillow and inhales deeply. He draws back, taking a whiff of the blue bed curtain, then sits down at Lady Beatrice's vanity table. Adjusting his black leather gloves, he opens a clear bottle of yellow-tinted perfume and sniffs it. He picks up a fluffy white powder puff and smells it, then sets it back carefully in its box. Holmes holds two silver-backed brushes close to his nose. He puts one down and runs his gloved thumb across the bristles of the other, collecting strands of strawberry blonde hair. Now in the kitchen, Watson stands at the table with one hand on Stevens's wrist, timing the butler's pulse with his pocket watch.
I've tried everything, but it doesn't make any difference at all. I'm in just as much agony now as I ever was.
Watson checks the time and smiles weakly. Outside, Lady Beatrice's carriage races toward the black steel gates. The two derby-hatted gatekeepers swing them open.
Right up. Oh, that'll be her ladyship. She's back early.
Please excuse me, but I'm afraid I have another urgent appointment.
Watson places his stethoscope into his doctor's bag and hurries out of the kitchen. The portly maid, her sleeve rolled up, shoots him a confused look. In Lady Beatrice's bedroom, Holmes examines a bar of soap, then rubs his hand along the rim of a washbowl. He rubs the tips of his fingers together. In the hall, Stevens leads Lady Beatrice and Carrie past framed paintings of champion horses. In the bedroom, a surprised Holmes wheels around, tiptoes to the door, and listens.
Almost there, my lady. Thank you, Stevens. We'll be all right now. Thank you, Stevens.
Right you are, miss.
Carrie opens the bedroom door. The veiled Lady Beatrice walks in without her assistance. She stands in front of the vanity table. The window curtains behind it flutter in the wind. Carrie closes the door. She joins Lady Beatrice at the vanity, then freezes.
Strange.
She gropes the area around the hairbrushes, then scans the room hurriedly. Outside, Watson walks away from the manor. Holmes waits, leaning against the trunk of a massive tree.
Holmes, thank goodness.
Fortunately, the bedroom was on the ground floor.
Did you have any luck?
Few things are still unclear, but before the night is out, I hope to have solved the mystery of Shoscombe Old Place.
They walk away together, Holmes with one arm poised behind his back. End of part two. Now in a room at the Green Dragon Inn, Watson stands beside a window holding the warped metal case. Holmes sits at a table looking through a brass microscope.
If Samuel Brewer returned to the hall to demand his money, he might have done so at night. He could have been the man that Sir Robert met at the old church. Perhaps Sir Robert flew into one of his rages and killed him. And in a moment of sheer panic, tried to dispose of the body by putting it into the furnace. Hence, the note case.
Watson, the vibrations! If perhaps medium and all the evidence we have so far is purely circumstantial.
He scrutinizes a strand of hair. He removes the hair from beneath the lens and holds the spiral strand up to his face, then places it down onto a yellow envelope. He shaves the hair with a scalpel. Several black particles begin to dot the envelope. Watson looks on curiously. Holmes picks up one of the particles with a pair of tweezers and shows Watson.
Resin.
Resin.
Holmes places the tweezers into the flame of a candle. The particle flares up.
On an alcohol base. Traces of it on a few strands of hair found in Lady Beatrice's room.
Holmes stares off into space, eyes narrowing.
Come, Watson. The telegram will not keep Sir Robert away much longer.
Where are we going?
Now in the stable, Sandy Bain hoists a saddle onto the wall. Mason hangs a lantern on a post.
Sir Robert.
Sir Robert approaches Mason with slow, threatening paces.
What happened while I was away?
Nothing, sir.
Don't lie to me, Mason. Something's been going on behind my back.
Mason folds his arms. Sir Robert eyes Sandy, then looks quickly back at Mason.
Has anyone been around here asking questions?
No one, sir.
Sandy blinks nervously.
But apart from some people I met near Crendall. I don't know their names.
What did you talk about?
Nothing much. They were interested in the old church.
Fool!
Sandy stares wide-eyed as Sir Robert runs out of the stable. Now we see Holmes and Watson hiking through a lush green forest at early dusk.
Well, if Samuel Brewer was not the victim, why was his note case found in the cellar at the hall?
Who else in the house has the initials S.B.?
S.B. Sandy Bay.
Harvey was dismissed for stealing from other members of the household. One of his duties was to tend to the furnace in the cellar.
Well, the fact remains that a body was burned. If it wasn't Brewer's, then whose was it?
Now, inside the house, Carrie steps out of Lady Beatrice's room and rendezvous with Sir Robert. She whispers fretfully to him. Sir Robert runs his fingers through his hair. Now, at the chapel courtyard, Holmes and Watson climb over fallen columns and church relics. As they walk, we see their feet trampling the damp ground, just past the jagged metal teeth of a bear trap camouflaged by leaves and creeping weeds. The men round the rear of the chapel. Holmes pulls open an iron gate. Watson uncovers a gas lantern, matches, and candles hidden under a burlap sack on the ground near the crypt door. Now inside the crypt, we see Holmes in a dark, narrow corridor. He holds up the lit gas lantern. Watson follows with a candle. A shaft of remaining daylight glows through the door behind them. The low-ceilinged corridor is littered with dead leaves, broken wooden furniture, and framed pictures. Compartments supported by stone pillars line the walls, where wooden coffins are stacked in rows. Watson lights several stationary candles on the walls of the passageway. The beam of Holmes's lantern reveals an inner gated enclave at the end of the passage. Holmes pulls open its rusty gates. Inside, a coffin rests on an elevated stone slab surrounded by candles and an overhanging crucifix. The two detectives enter solemnly.
What could you possibly hope to find in a place like this?
Holmes fingers a piece of metal protruding from the coffin.
The lead lining has been cut.
He swings the lantern to the top of the red velvet coffin lid. A bolt with the head of a cross lies loose and off-center in a hole. Another lies flat beside it. Holmes takes them both.
Just as I thought. The bolts have been loosened.
He holds them up to a candle.
Watson, I'm going to need your help to open this.
Holmes, that's desecration.
Holmes sets down the lantern at the foot of the elevated stone slab. He grimaces as he pushes at the lid. Watson pulls reluctantly on the opposite side. The lid slides open. Inside, a large, hairy spider crawls down a high lace collar. Watson winces. Holmes arches an eyebrow and swallows hard. Sir Robert bursts into the crypt.
Who are you? What are you doing on my property?
Yeah?
Who are you? What are you doing here?
Holmes picks up the lantern and dangles it over the coffin, illuminating the spider. Sir Robert stumbles back up the narrow corridor, his hand to his head. Holmes and Watson hurry after him. He plows through the cast iron gate of the crypt. The gape-mouthed gargoyle leers down at him. Sir Robert tumbles to the ground, his right leg caught in the bear trap. Mason runs out of a thicket as Holmes and Watson hurry toward the fallen man.
Mr. Holmes, what's happened?
A good question, Mr. Mason. One that should be directed at Sir Robert.
Watson pries the trap open.
Disgusting contraptions.
Later, Holmes bursts into Lady Beatrice's room.
How dare you? Get out!
I was going to join you for tea, but I see I'm too late.
Get up this instant, or I'll call for Sir Robert.
Sir Robert knows that I'm here. Please, Miss Evans, will you sit down?
He points to a chair. Carrie reluctantly obeys.
I felt I couldn't visit Shotscombe Old Place without paying my respects to Lady Beatrice.
He smiles at her turned back.
Oh, you have brandy with your tea.
He motions to a bottle.
For medicinal purposes, of course.
I suppose. But is that enough, I wonder?
Enough for what?
Brandy revives the spirits. But how do you think it is sufficient to raise the dead? Don't move.
Holmes's fingers on his cane handle flare in warning. He and Carrie exchange a hard stare. Lady Beatrice moves her head slightly, then remains still. Holmes rises from his seat at the edge of the bed and sidles up behind Lady Beatrice. He places his gloved hands on either side of her veil. Now, in slow motion, he seizes her gray hat and pulls it upward. The long, opaque, billowy veil rises to reveal the made-up face of young Joe Barnes. Now in the parlor, Watson dresses Sir Robert's ankle. Joe, now in work clothes, sobs in a corner as Carrie rubs makeup off his face. He wipes away tears with his coat sleeve. Holmes paces the floor.
Well, that should be comfortable enough till your own doctor arrives.
Thank you.
I am Sherlock Holmes. Perhaps my name is familiar to you.
Sir Robert takes a deep breath.
I know appearances are against me, but you must believe that I could act in no other way.
I'm very happy to hear you say so. But I fear your explanations must be for the police.
Carrie and Joe look up.
Please, Sir Robert.
The responsibility for what has been done is entirely mine. Miss Evans and Joe Barnes were merely following my instructions. You must promise that they will come to no harm.
I can promise you nothing.
He points a finger at Sir Robert.
But I will hear a plain statement of the facts.
Very well. You've clearly gone pretty deeply into my affairs. Otherwise, I should not have found you where I did. I've always known that if Beatrice died, the estate would revert to my brother-in-law's family. Everything would be seized, including the stables and the horses. Oh, Mr. Holmes, my sister did die just a week ago.
And you told no one?
I had little alternative. If I told the truth, I faced absolute ruin. But if I could stave things off until the race, I knew all might be well. Beatrice died of the heart condition that had long afflicted her.
That will be for a coroner to decide.
Her own doctor would certify that for months her symptoms had threatened such an end. Joe Barnes came to see me in search of work a day or two before Beatrice died. He He seemed a trustworthy lad, and it came into my mind that he might, for a short time, impersonate my dear sister. It was but a case of appearing daily in her carriage, for no one need enter her room, save Miss Evans. Of course, I had to take her into my confidence. The whole deception distressed me greatly, but I could see no other course to take. Naturally, the body couldn't remain in the bedroom.
A flashback.
On the first night, Joe and I carried it out to the old mill house. We were followed by her pet spaniel, which afterwards howled continually at the door. So I felt some safer place was needed. I got rid of the dog, and we carried Beatrice to the crypt of the church. It seemed to me to be no unworthy resting place if we put her for a time in the coffin of one of her husband's ancestors, lying in what is still consecrated ground. I paid my respects to her there every day.
Another flashback. In the candlelit crypt, we see Sir Robert's pained face sprinkled with beads of perspiration. He turns his head to where Lady Beatrice lies in the open coffin. The stone slab, altar-like, is surrounded by glowing candles. The crucifix hovers above it. On the slab, Lady Beatrice's closed eyes are just visible over the rim of the coffin. Her bloodless white face contrasts dramatically with her curly strawberry blonde hair. Sir Robert turns away, his shoulders tremble uncontrollably. Joe Barnes sits on a stool at the mouth of the enclave. He rises slowly and takes out a ragged cloth. He hesitates, then taps Sir Robert delicately on the shoulder.
As to the old relics which we took from the coffin, Joe and I removed them. He descended from the bedroom at night and burned them in the furnace.
Back in the parlor, Sir Robert stares ahead blankly.
Was it necessary to lay that monstrous trap?
I was determined that no one should disturb my sister's rest. But how you suspected her death, I cannot imagine.
Well, yesterday, when Miss Evans ordered the carriage to drive on, I concluded that she was afraid of something. I suspected that something was Jasper. Miss Evans knew that dogs do not make mistakes. He would have known that it wasn't his mistress. But we must leave all this for the police.
But why? A day or two is all I need. Say nothing yet, I beg of you. The race will have been run, and my nightmare might be over. I loved Beatrice with all my heart. There was no indignity or irreverence. I don't feel I have wronged the dead. I realize that my motives were selfish, but my sister would not have wished to see me destroyed.
Holmes stares absently at Sir Robert, then lowers his gaze. He springs out of his chair, straightens up, then points his cane directly at him.
That does not entitle you to break the law.
Sir Robert takes in a deep breath and fixes his eyes on Holmes. Now in Holmes's flat, the detectives sit opposite each other in armchairs. Watson reads a newspaper.
Listen to this, Holmes. Following the success of Shoscombe Prince in yesterday's Champion Stakes, Sir Robert has received sufficient winnings to settle all his debts with enough left to re-establish him in a fair position in life. Ha!
Holmes rolls his eyes.
However, the victory was marred by the sudden death of Sir Robert's sister, Lady Beatrice Falder, whose love of horses was at least as great as his own.
The men exchange knowing glances.
Even the elusive Samuel Brewer has returned from his hideaway in France to send a telegram of congratulations to Sir Robert on his win.
It transpires that even creditors have their creditors. It explains why Samuel Brewer was so anxious to get his money back.
But to send a telegram, such barefaced hypocrisy.
So how much did you win on Shoscombe Prince?
Watson looks up uncomfortably.
20 guineas.
It's disgraceful.
Mrs. Hudson enters with a bottle of champagne on a tray.
Champagne, Mrs. Hudson?
Of course, in the circumstances.
Well, it's very good of you, but I've only won 20 guineas.
Plus my 10. You're not the only one that likes a plunge on the horses from time to time, Doctor.
Oh, gee.
Now we see a sunny country meadow. 8 men on horseback ride slowly through the tree-lined field. This program has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, a service of the WGBH Educational Foundation. Funding provided by the United States Department of Education. Descriptions read by Peter Haydu. Credits roll. Cast: Jeremy Brett as Sherlock Holmes, Edward Hardwick as Dr. Watson, Robin Ellis as Sir Robert Norbrighton, Elizabeth Weaver as Lady Beatrice Folder, Frank Grimes as John Mason, Denise Black as Carrie Evans, Michael Bilton as Stevens, Martin Stone as Sandy Bain, Michael Wynn as Josiah Barnes, James Coyle as Samuel Brewer, Rosalie Williams as Mrs. Hudson, Jude Law as Joe Barnes, Alan Pattison as Harvey. Music by Patrick Gowers. Produced by Michael Cox. Directed by Patrick Lau. Copyright Granada Television, 1990. Executive Producer USA, Rebecca Eaton. Made by Granada Television of England in association with WGBH, Boston.